Growing up. My name is Kevin Malcolm Rice. I was born on the 1st of June 1961 in the town of Mufulira in what was then known as Northern Rhodesia, now Zambia. My parents were originally from South Africa but had moved north as my father decided to work on the copper mines in Zambia. I was the second child, born some 11 and a half months after my sister. Yes, my name is Kevin, spelt with an A, not an I, which is the conventional way of spelling it. I've always joked that I'm not the conventional type, and I suppose in many ways I've tried not to conform to whatever is regarded as the norm. So, why is my name spelt differently? Well, it's all my father's doing. When my sister was born, my parents decided to name her Linda, but my mother wanted to spell her name differently, that is, L-Y-N-D-A. So she gave my father strict instructions from her maternity bed to go and register their firstborn and spell her name as they had agreed. Unfortunately, in my father's enthusiasm to register the birth, he totally forgot about the spelling, much to the dismay of my mother. In the end, all was forgiven and forgotten, and some 11 and a half months later, I was born. My parents decided to name me Kevin, but my father, who had the memory of an elephant when he wanted to, had not forgotten. He decided to surprise my mother with his initiative. And so when he registered my presence on earth, he spelt my first name differently to rectify his mistake of the past. Within a year or two, my parents decided to move back to South Africa, and according to history, I grew up in the southern suburbs of Johannesburg. My brother Mark was born a little over 3 years after I was born. I recall very little of my early childhood. In fact, I only have a single memory of what I believe was our first house, which was in Rosettenville. I do, however, have a large framed collage of photographs given to me by my family to commemorate my 40th birthday, which contains some early pictures of that period of time. One such picture shows a scene of a boy about 3 years old, looking distinctly concerned given the fact that his sister was trying to marry him. Perhaps that left me with a lasting impression about marriage, or maybe it just confirms that my sister has great taste. My parents then built a house in the newly established suburb of Ridgeway, a suburb that seemed a long distance from Rosettenville at the time. We moved there when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I lived there for the next 12 years of my life. I was, for most of my school life, the typical South African child. I was fortunate, though, in that I am intelligent and barely had to make any effort with my studies to achieve good grades. I pursued an active sports life, but I was just an average to above-average sportsman who participated in athletics, rugby, soccer, cricket, and basketball. In primary school, I learned to play chess and became one of the top chess players in the school. I was a leader of sorts, and besides being a prefect, I captained many teams that I participated in. As I reflect back on my school days, I can see how often I tried to hide my intelligence and did whatever it took, mostly extremely naughty escapades, to ensure that I was seen as one of the boys. Nerds were distinctly uncool, even in those days. Lessons learned? 1. Be proud of your gifts and capabilities and be true to yourself. 2. Strive for people to accept you for what you are and not for what you think they want you to be. Back in those days, we were typical middle-class citizens, which provided us with many benefits. From primary school right through to high school, our parents had the time to be actively involved in our sporting experiences. My parents would attend all the games and act as the lift club to take us to our away games. My dad got involved coaching various soccer sides, etc. Their weekends revolved around our extramurals, from their boys' sport or their daughters' dancing or drum majorettes activities. We were privileged. My parents had started their own business. They worked long hours, mostly after normal working hours, so that they could still invest huge amounts of time in our extramural activities. From a young age, I had aspirations of being a pilot. I was doing reasonably well at my high school. Sir John Adamson from Standard 6, in those days, well, these days, in fact, Grade 8, to Standard 8, Grade 10 today, at that time, Sir John was not really recognised for his academic achievements. So my parents and I decided that in order for me to achieve the best possible grades, I should go to an academic school for my last 2 years of high school. My parents then enrolled me into Damalan College, which was located in Johannesburg city centre. This was quite an adjustment for me at first, as it meant making new friends, which was something I was never good at, as I am generally a fairly shy person. It did, however, have some great benefits, such as not having to wear a school uniform. You could wear whatever you liked, besides jeans, but you had to wear a tie. In addition, you could grow long hair, something that, with the benefit of hindsight, I'm extremely grateful for, as I became bald in my mid-twenties. Fortunately, I have photographic evidence to prove that I could blow-dry my hair with the best of them. What I did discover about myself in those early years was that my friends generally tended to be older than me. I never purposely set out to make friends with older people. It just came naturally. For example, when I was 16 or 17 years old, my friends would be about 18 and 21 years old. I was always regarded as being mature for my age, so I had no problems fitting in and adapting. Lessons learned. 3. Be thankful for the sacrifices that others have made to enable you to live your journey. Acknowledge them while you can, as you never know when they are destined to complete their journey and depart this planet. My parents had an interesting relationship. There's no doubt in my mind that they actually did love each other, but their relationship was tumultuous at times. They were both extremely stubborn. I suppose I could compare it to two dogs trying to determine who the alpha male is. Mostly, they were affectionate towards each other, always holding hands, calling each other little pet names such as love or darling, when they were not fighting, that is. In fact, it was always easy to know when they were fighting, as they resorted to calling each other by their first names. So when we heard an Aubrey or a Sheila, we knew there was drama in our household. When they were fighting, it could go on for days, like a battle of attrition. Neither would want to give in and make peace, as that would surely be a sign of weakness. Sadly, we the kids were usually brought into the midst of the battle zone. On occasion, when it was a really serious situation, we would be summoned before my parents and asked to choose which parent we each wanted to stay with. I can't remember how many times we were subjected to this, but I clearly remember one of the earlier times when I was in primary school, so I was probably about 9 or 10 at the time. As parents, how can you expect young kids to stand in front of you and choose one of you? I mean, it's ridiculous. And even at that young age, none of us actually chose one over the other, at least not that I can remember. Despite many of these terrible incidents, my parents never got divorced. But that did not mean that we grew up in a stable environment. Perhaps that is why all three of us kids have been married more than once. One of the greatest lessons I have learned from my father was when I was about 12 or 13. My father was an insurance loss adjuster, which was the term that he liked to put on his business cards and letterheads. To us more simple folk, we know these people as insurance assessors, those cruel people who always tell you that you are underinsured, so the insurance company can pay you out a lesser amount than the damage you may have suffered. Anyway, he had his own business, and I believe he was always fair. Insurance claims almost always required items which had been stolen or damaged to be replaced. The insurance companies had special arrangements with various stores for furniture, household appliances, electrical appliances, etc. As my father sent the insured victims to these stores, he was a big revenue generator for them. As a result, the store owners would always try and curry favour with him. Every year in December, a flood of gifts would arrive at our house to say thank you to my dad for his support. Most of these gifts were expensive, and we could have used them as we could not afford them. Without fail, he would then have every one of the gifts returned. This was terrible for us kids to see, because, well, we could have put them to good use. While we shed our crocodile tears, my father simply told us that if he ever accepted a gift, then the person providing the gift might believe that my father owed them a favor, a position he would not allow himself to be in. He said he supported those stores because they had good products at good prices and provided a good service. If that ever changed, he would have no problem replacing them. He did not want to feel obligated to them, and by accepting gifts, he could possibly feel guilty about moving the business elsewhere. This value, or moral if you will, has had an enormous impact on my personal and business life. I have never wined and dined business prospects until such time that they have placed their business with me. Then I only did it as a thank you gesture. I've never offered suppliers or customers any form of kickback or incentives for them to do business with me. In fact, I often avoid purchasing anything from my customers in case they feel obligated to give me a special discount. In the instances where I have purchased from my clients, I've made it clear up front they will only do so if they do not try to offer me a discount. Perhaps I'm a bit extreme about this, but then again, I guess I'm guilty of being extreme about a lot of things. Lessons learned. 4. As a parent, try and keep your domestic squabbles and arguments private and away from your children. Fighting in front of them causes pain and insecurity in children, especially when they are relatively young. 5. Never ask your children to choose one parent over the other. If there's no solution to making your relationship work, then you, as the parent, must make the decisions and communicate what you have agreed to your children. 6. Never allow yourself to be put in a position that may compromise you at a later stage by accepting offers, gifts, or incentives from anyone. On the spiritual or religious front, my parents and to a lesser extent myself made some changes over the years. We were brought up as Roman Catholics. Are there any other types of Catholics? I was baptized and did the Holy Communion and the confirmation bits as well. In fact, we went to church fairly regularly. I also remember having that special Saturday afternoon privilege of sitting in a claustrophobic box, telling another man about all my so-called sins. I have clear memories of my questioning this illogical procedure. I thought that if God was so clever, why did I have to tell another man about what I'd done? Because surely he would have seen me doing it. And why did I have to tell another man? Why couldn't I just tell God directly? I guess I was never in favor of the middleman modus operandi. What also perturbed me from a young age were the people that attended the Catholic Church. I had many Lebanese friends whose fathers owned bucket shops, a euphemism for illegal bookmakers, and I knew this was against the law, yet these men were seen as pillars of the church, who were constantly praised for their financial contributions and the like. This seemed somewhat hypocritical to me at the time, but we continued to go to church. I think it was when I was about 14 years old that my parents decided to move to another church. Somehow they ended up going to what was then considered to be a new style church. It was less formal or structured compared with what they had come from. It may well have been Rhema or something similar, and they came back all excited about the fact that they'd now become reborn Christians. I was not particularly interested in this and shied away from it. The great news for me was that I no longer had to go to the Catholic Church. In fact, by that stage, I had managed to worm my way out of going to any church, despite the protestations of my parents. They were intensely committed to their new path, and they tried valiantly to get their kids to join them. It wasn't too long afterwards that my sister and brother became reborn Christians as well, but not me. For some reason, I was holding back. On the surface, reborn Christianity seemed to be a lot more sensible and more liberal. The fact that they played music, danced, clapped, hugged, and hugged again was different. I was going through a phase of questioning everything. I questioned religion in particular. I've always believed in Jesus Christ and what he did. I've always believed there is a God. So neither of these issues troubled me. What did trouble me about the whole thing was that if you were not reborn, that is, you haven't confessed that Jesus is your Lord and Saviour, you would not make it to heaven. I've always believed that Hindus, Muslims, and Jews worship and believe in the same God as I do. I could not reconcile how a very religious Muslim, Hindu, or Jew, who had lived his life doing good, practicing his faith, and helping his community, would miss the jet plane to heaven just because he was not reborn Christian. Another argument I had was that if a murderer genuinely feels his remorse prior to his death and becomes a reborn Christian, he manages to get a ticket on the plane. Didn't seem fair or consistent. So I was in no rush to join the clan. Another concern I had about them was the so-called miracle healing that they constantly put on show. Look, I do believe that miracles can and do happen, but I didn't believe in the church's commercialization of God's healing powers. In my humble opinion, I believed the difference between the traditional religions and reborn Christianity was that some enterprises were run by priests, ministers, while others were run by businessmen. In either case, they were chasing after your money to fuel the empires that they were trying to build, and in many instances, purely for their own indulgence. To this day, even though I eventually became a reborn Christian at the age of 20, my opinion about religious institutions remains the same.